There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Hello, everyone. You are listening to the latest Flyers Talk podcast. I am Jordan Hall, and as always, I am joined by the dynamic Joe Fordyce. Joe, the Flyers are finally through this murderer's row of seven games against contenders. They went 2-3-2. The stretch against contenders ended with kind of a wild back-and-forth 6-5 overtime loss to the Rangers at Madison Square Garden. But let's get into the big picture here, Joe. How do you think the Flyers fared in this stretch? Do you think they stayed afloat? Are you okay with the results that they got?
I think you have to be okay. The issue, I guess, is that the final game that would have made that stretch hockey 500, if you were to win in regulation, was a game that you led 2-0. And it was a game where it was a winnable game. You had a Igor Shesterkin, is one of the best goalies in the league, was not, I mean, I thought he played well in the game despite allowing 5 goals. I thought he looked good. I thought Sam Harrison looked good, even though there were a lot of goals. That was a winnable game. So I think that kind of leaves a bad taste in your mouth. But overall, I think you have to be happy with it because of what could have been. I mean, the Bruins win, to me, is one of the more impressive wins of the season. But when you look at it overall, I mean, you're playing the cream of the crop, and there's not really any of those games outside of the Florida game that you were not in. Mm-hmm. And the Flyers were in the Florida game for a bit. It's not like they got blown out from the opening faceoff. So, I think you have to be happy. You got points, you kept pace. I mean, you do. The worst case scenario with the Ranger game is that on the same night, the Red Wings and Capitals both go to overtime. Mm-hmm. So that single point that you get by going to overtime with the Rangers is huge when you look at it in relation to what happens in that Capitals-Red Wings game, because everything's getting more compact now, and the group of teams that are fighting for the spot are thinning out, but the ones that are in are getting closer to you now. And, you know, every point's crucial. So like I said, overall, I think you have to be happy with the results. I just feel like that last game, it was a very winnable game, that you had a 2-goal lead, you had another lead, and then just, you know, some things kind of, it was a weird game. But it felt like a very winnable game, particularly when you get one of the league's best goalies on a night where he wasn't at his best. I mean, regardless of some of the saves he made, I don't think he would tell you that letting in 5 goals is one of his best games.
Yeah, I think the overwhelming positive to this stretch was that they're still in third place. I mean, not only did they not fall out of a playoff spot, but they didn't fall into a wild card spot. They stayed where they were, and I think that's important, that they survived this stretch in many ways. I thought that was probably the goal, was to be competitive and kind of survive it. And to get points in 4 of 7 games, I think, is surviving it. I think that's a positive aspect. I think the Flyers are kind of fighting the whole not getting too caught up in moral victories, but also understanding they're playing pretty well. I mean, they're out shooting teams. They've taken it to a couple of these good teams. Unfortunately, they haven't gotten great goaltending at times, and they've had a couple losses. But I think they're really fighting that whole staying positive. They believe like they like their process, but also not getting wrapped up in losing games and being okay with it.
Well, so, I also think moral victory the term implies that you get nothing for it. Mm-hmm. But Carolina and the game last night against the Rangers, you do get a point out of it. So I don't think it's a full like moral victory, like let's celebrate a loss.
Right.
There is a result. There is a reward in that you get a single point. So that's nothing. That's not nothing. So I don't think it's a full, I know they say moral victory, but when you're looking at the standings, if you're in the playoffs, you look back at the Carolina point, or you look back at the Ranger, the point at the Garden, and it's not a moral victory. It's a crucial point. I mean, you couple those two points together, that's another win. Mm-hmm. So I understand the mindset of not, you know, getting caught up in moral victories, but doing it in, when you lose in regulation is one thing. These two examples with Carolina and the Rangers, it's not like a full moral victory where there's nothing to show for it.
And they rallied twice to get those points. It wasn't like they blew four goal leads and went to overtime because they blew leads. I mean, 2-0 against the Rangers, they blew that lead. But 2-0 against New York is.
It was also 2-0 early in the game. Yeah. It wasn't 2-0 with 5 minutes left.
Right.
So I you have to take some stock in that. I mean, how many teams are going to shut down the players on that team?
Right.
For, I don't, you know, 45 minutes.
Yeah.
45 minutes of gameplay, I should say. You're not going to do it. So you knew it was coming at some point. It was just a matter of the Flyers could hang in there, which they showed they could. They kept answering. They looked. When John Tortorella calls a timeout, that game's hanging in the balance. And to me, it looked like the Flyers were about to get run off the ice there. He calls the timeout and things change and it goes back the other way. And quite frankly, if he doesn't call that timeout, I'm not sure they get that point because it looked like the Rangers were going to run away. Even though they were only up one goal, the way things were looking on the ice, it looked like it was a matter of time. And then that timeout was a well-placed timeout.
Celebrity cook Steve Martorano brings his Italian-American cooking back home to Philly. Enjoy Martorano's Prime at Rivers Casino and Steve's famous meatballs with Sunday gravy, prime steaks, and more. Make reservations for Martorano's Prime on Open Table. Joe, I think a big talking point, and I believe it's a talking point because I know I've gotten texts about it. I've seen tweets about it. Brad Shaw was even asked about it after the game, was how the Flyers used their lineup in overtime. They went with Ryan Poehling, Noah Case, Travis Sanheim against some of the Rangers' big boys. Overtime ended 36 seconds into the bonus session. Some people were wondering, why not go with a more offensive-minded lineup? Why not go with the Konecny-Frost-Tippett line, which is producing? How do you see it? How do you feel about how the Flyers went there in OT and how they've been going in OT recently?
Well, I actually think last night extends a little bit into the end of regulation where with a minute left, there's a crucial faceoff. There's nobody in the ballpark on this roster right now in faceoffs with Sean Couturier. I'd like to see him out there for at least the one with a minute left in regulation or the one at the beginning of overtime. If you don't want him out there for overtime, because of speed reasons, whatever it might be, you can do, I mean, teams do it all the time. They'll put their best faceoff guy out there and then get, you know, switch him out for another player. Now, I will say this. Speed was clearly not the goal of the lineup that was put out there in overtime because none of the players that were out there, that really wasn't a speed lineup. And that was my issue because you're against speed for the Rangers. You're against dynamic players. Artemi Panarin, Adam Fox, Vincent Trocheck, a little less so dynamic, but a goal scorer, scored earlier in the game. So it's a tough lineup to put out there against the top guy. And what we saw, the Rangers made quick work of it. And I mean, you had to know they looked across and said, this is the lineup we're getting. I mean, they had just seen Owen Tippett score a goal based on pure speed late in the third period. So I did think it was a little puzzling, but I do think it was beyond the overtime. I thought it was late in the game, in the regulation, late in regulation in the third period. Some of the lineups were a little, I don't know, questionable would be the best word. Because you need the guys with the best skill sets out there. And I don't feel like that was what was put out there late in the game, or definitely not in overtime. Because we've seen it all year when this team goes to overtime, Konechny's almost always out there to start the overtime. You mentioned Tippett, and Tippett is a guy that's going to drive offense. Now, were you happy with just getting 1 point? To me, I don't think in last night's situation you can be, because, look, I'm not saying everybody's on the bench checking their phones, but I'm sure the score from that other game is up, and you realize points are being gotten by both sides in that game. The second point really would have been valuable. So to me, you have to put your best lineup out there. But I'm not the coach. So, but I did find it to, you know, it kind of was one of those things that jumped off the screen. Like, oh, these are the guys we're going with to start the overtime, and ended quickly.
Yeah, it did. I think it's a little bit of nitpicking. It's easy to look at the lineup when everyone's watching overtime. It's everything's
under. The glaring thing too is, and we haven't mentioned it yet, but Poehling looked like he was laboring. Mm-hmm. And there's a couple schools of thought on that. One, why did no one realize it? And two, and Al Morgani brought this up in the postgame show last night, is it on Poehling to say, at least I can't start this overtime period because I got something going on? Mm-hmm. Because it was clear. I mean, JJ called it in he said he appears to be favoring something. So it was not anything that was obvious his last shift in the third period, but it became very obvious when the overtime period started that he was laboring in some way, shape, or form. So is it on him? Some would say yes. So there was a lot of stuff going on there that could raise questions, I thought.
And I'm sure Poehling's fighting the whole, well, my coach is putting me out there to start overtime. I better get out there and not pass up on this opportunity. But then at the same time, you wonder, can you get someone else out there that's healthier and better suited for it? I understand the Flyers' logic of the Rangers are putting out their best offensive guys that are going to threaten the score. And if you make one little mistake, they'll go the other way and they're going to score. So maybe they're thinking, let's combat this with some of our better defensive minded players, try to survive that first shift, get our offensive guys out there with a better matchup. You know, it's kind of like a pick your poison. So I'm not like totally upset about it or thinking like, what the heck are they doing, or really questioning them too much. But I think you can absolutely make the counterpoint of try to attack them with your better offensive players, play to win the game, not like survive the first shift. I do think Poehling's one of their faster players and one of their more dynamic guys in that sense. And he's been playing well, and he's a good two-way guy. I think that's what Bradshaw said, was he's been one of their better two-way forwards recently. So he felt like he earned the right to be out there and give them a good shot. But I'm sure they will probably reevaluate
right.
things
and
here.
And that, to me, tells me they didn't know he was hurt.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think they noticed it. Yeah. He probably didn't say anything. I mean, that game is pure chaos in the third period. So I'm sure they're not watching Poehling super closely. And if he's good enough to play, they're going to put him out there. But I mean, overtime can go either way. It overtime is so volatile. It can swing like crazy. So it's easy in hindsight to look and see they scored 30 seconds in and be like, man, what the heck were they doing? I think it's a little bit of nitpicking, but I do understand why people are saying, why the heck is Konechny out there? What about Tippett? Like, Tippett is still kind of raw defensively. He's not a great defensive forward. Morgan Frost, as everyone knows, very offensive minded. So maybe they're thinking, if we put them out there, New York's going to take it to them real quickly. So I can see both schools of thought with the overtime decisions. But
my only thing with the overtime is, with 3-on-3 and all that open space, offense is going to happen.
Yeah.
So exactly. To me, at some point, you have to coach to the the inevitable offense and the inevitable up and down style, aside from when the defensemen kind of hold the puck, which has become the thing. But I think you have to coach to what's going to happen. And what's going to happen is generally both teams are going to get chances, but you need to have guys out there that are finishers, you know, that are going to take advantage of the opportunities. And that is what I feel like that lineup last night in particular was lacking, was guys that are, you know, they're not like, they're not, they can finish, they seize opportunities on the offensive end. Because to me, when it comes to the 3-on-3, it becomes less about the team and more about those three players that are on the ice, which is a whole nother conversation, which is why I don't love 3-on-3, because I don't really think it shows which teams are better in the same way that shootouts don't. It becomes more individualized. But when you look at that, I think you need to put your skill guys out there. And I mean, Travis Konechny's killed penalties this year, so it's not like he's, you know, just an offensive guy who forgets about the other side of the ice. So I definitely like to at least seeing him out there.
And one more point I'll make on this, and it defends the put more offense out there argument, is that it's kind of like a penalty kill in many ways. And a lot of, I know, coaches like to put their most skilled and most offensive minded players on the PKs because it threatens the other team's power play. It gives the power play something to think about when they're out there, is that this team has some offensive guys on their PK and they can threaten the other way. It's probably very similar in 3-on-3 overtime. If you put your better offensive players out there, it makes the other three think a little harder and maybe think twice about taking a chance because, you know, it can go the other way. So yeah, maybe being more aggressive and getting your best guys out there, try to win the game, maybe rather than being more defensive. But yeah, we'll see where the Flyers go with it. I'm sure they're going to have another overtime game, Joe. As we all know, this team goes to OT. And we'll see how the Flyers handle it. If they adjust, it'll be up to the coaching staff to really make those adjustments. Speaking of the coaching staff, Joe, John Tortorella issued an apology for how he handled the postgame press conference when he was asked about Felix Sandstrom. He didn't like how he just used his body language to express frustration. I thought it was good on John Tortorella to do that. I didn't think he needed to issue an apology. A lot of people will probably argue there was no need to apologize, but I think he felt like he was in the wrong there and his player deserved better. He came out and expressed accountability. I thought that was good on him. I think that kind of starts at the top with leadership, is accountability, and he showed it there. What did you think of it?
So the position Felix Sandstrom is not an easy one. He's not playing that much. So you're getting, I mean, he can practice all he wants, but the game, getting in the games when you're playing not even once a week, it's a tough spot. So I think you don't want to just put him on full blast. And that, I think what he did, how he handled that, could have been construed as that, even though he didn't say anything. Actually, could have been maybe even made it look worse, him not saying anything.
Right.
So, and I know you wrote a story about how the volumes, it spoke of him not saying anything. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was good on him. And the other thing is, the stuff you hear about with John Tortorella is always like the negative stuff. It's always, you know, he was kind of outspoken about this negatively, or he went at this media person, or, you know, he ripped this player. It's never like, you don't hear about the other stuff. Now, you could say that about all media, because people saying all different things are great is not juicy. So that might be why. But in this case, I think it was good because you see the other side. Like, hey, you know, this guy does have a soul. He does have a heart. Mm-hmm. You know, he realizes that those are human beings. And I don't think any of us have ever doubted that. But the way it's presented nationally on blogs and everything going viral now is that, like, sometimes maybe this guy is like a soulless, ruthless sort of coach that's just going to come out and tell everybody how bad everybody was. Mm-hmm. And I think this is good to get the other side of that. Because as I said, the backup goaltender is not, you know, how they always say in football, a backup quarterback is not important until it's important. Mm-hmm. I would argue the same with the goaltender, especially in this situation, because this is not, the Flyers are not relying on Felix Sandstrom. They're in a situation with their goaltenders that at this point in this year, because of some circumstances that they weren't really seeing coming down the pike. So they're not putting him in. I mean, it's high leverage situations, but it's sparingly. It's not like they're saying, okay, I mean, a lot of us thought that Sandstrom was going to get Saturday and Sunday, or sorry, that Erson was going to get Saturday and Sunday's games. Mm-hmm. And then it was almost a little surprising when he didn't. So they're only playing Sandstrom when they have to. That is a tough spot for a goaltender. Because he knows that he's not being relied on. And then all of a sudden he's being relied on. And he's being relied on, against one of the teams that's fighting for the President's Trophy in the NHL. So that's not an easy situation. So I think it was good on him to issue that apology. I mean, it might not seem like a big deal to a lot of people, but I can promise you it's a big deal to Felix Sandstrom. Mm-hmm. So I think it was good on John Tortorella to do that.
One thing I think people don't know about John Tortorella is he is truly nothing if he's not loyal. And he is loyal. He will back his guys. Like, he will defend anyone and everyone if they're his guy. And I think right now he just figured this was a time to back your goalie. I mean, this is a time to kind of rally together and be loyal to one another. And I think deep down he realized the body language looked really poor. He probably wanted to say something different, and he didn't put any words out there. It's emotional. It's
right.
Very quick.
And you're probably
going to
need this guy next weekend.
Exactly.
There's a Friday, Saturday back-to-back.
Right.
And you can't lose him mentally.
Yeah.
You can't have him thinking that his coach isn't behind him. So I think that's another big factor.
Yeah. And here's Tortorella kind of showing his locker room that he's going to have people's backs. Yeah. You know, like through thick and thin, he will have people's backs. And it can't hurt to kind of hammer home the accountability narrative that the coach is not immune to expressing remorse or saying, I should have done this better than how I handled it. And I think he kind of shows something there to his team that he can admit that he was at fault there and could have been better. Again, people will probably argue that he didn't have to do that or wasn't at fault. He felt he was, and he wanted to say it. And the fact that he went to Sandstrom personally and apologized, I thought was a real good thing. It's, speaking to Sandstrom at Madison Square Garden, he appreciated it. He said he knows he needs to be better, but he appreciated his coach having his back. So I think good for John Tortorella to do that. And I think that was a good time to do it.
And the other thing is, this may happen around the league a lot, mm-hmm. but because John Tortorella is, everything he does is so polarizing, mm-hmm. all this kind of stuff gets magnified. So, you know, if I'm trying to think of a team that, you know, so if John Cooper apologizes to their backup goaltender, and that's a situation where we know Andre Vasilevsky plays almost every game for Tampa, and if their backup goaltender spells him for a game, has a bad game, John Cooper might have an issue like that at a press conference, and he goes and apologizes. But because it's John Cooper, it's not necessarily going to make this big story. Because John Cooper's John Cooper and John Tortorella is John Tortorella. There's a difference in how polarizing everything this coach does becomes. And it has been that way for 20 years. Mm-hmm. So it's not like this isn't new to John Tortorella, and John Tortorella's reputation and his behavior isn't new to any of the players. So I think they also understand there's a little bit of an extra microscope on everything he does, particularly when it comes to this kind of stuff. So I think that's a factor too.
Everyone's watching John Tortorella post-game press conferences because they're looking for that clip to blast out on social media and have it go viral. So I don't think Tortorella is totally comprehending that people watch him so closely, because I don't think he gives a damn. And then
no,
also,
I was going to say, I don't think he cares.
I don't think he cares. And I don't think he's on social media. I don't think he's perusing the internet to see what people are saying about him, writing about him. But I think he's starting to understand a little bit that he is very much a face, and he's very much a leader, and you have to, you know, watch what you say, and people are going to watch closely to what you say. And here was an example where he can kind of come out and express an apology because he knows it'll go a long way. I think he understands his words have, you know, consequences and people listen.
Yeah. And I think in sports, we've seen this a lot. We've seen old school guys mm-hmm. not realize things that aren't a story to them become a story because of a myriad of different reasons. And you never know what can make something go viral. I know that night when you asked the question and he did that, I was not, it didn't occur to me, oh, that's going to go viral.
Yeah.
Same. And then it was like, okay, it just exploded. And you never know. And then it's, there's always this with an old school coach and John Tortorella, he's clearly an old school coach. There's a delayed reaction to something going viral. And I'm sure there's part of him that probably thinks like, really, but again, the polarizing nature of this coach, it doesn't take that much for things to go viral because people are looking for it every time. You know, there's people that work at NHL.com. There's people that work for on our different platforms that are looking for it. He's a polarizing, entertaining coach, and people are looking for the entertaining stuff. And him telling you that three guys played great is not the kind of stuff that's going to get everybody all worked up. It's this kind of stuff. And, you know, like you said, he's starting to realize that.
Exactly. And he will very much be the face of this moving forward. People are going to, watch to see what he does. It's, John Tortorella is, as you mentioned, very polarizing. And he's very much the leader of this Flyers team that's trying to nail down a playoff berth. 9 games to go, Joe. The race is tight as ever. Big games to come, and we'll have it all covered here on the Flyers Talk podcast. Of course, on Flyers pre- and post-game live, produced by our very own Joe Fordyce. Joe, thanks so much. Great to see you. Great to chat with you. A big thank you to Ben Berry, our podcast producer and guru. And a big thank you to Flyers fans. As always, thank you for listening to the latest Flyers Talk podcast. Wherever you get your podcasts, please rate and listen, and we cannot wait to talk to you next time.